Funded Today Nation, welcome back to the Funded Today podcast. Last time, we had our first episode about your life after crowdfunding. We got a couple more in the works on that. Check it out. That's the first of a series that's going to be ongoing about everything that happens after crowdfunding, which is probably the most exciting part. If you missed it, again, that's episode number 20, and it's the best way we've found to continue to raise money while you're starting your new business. And remember, every Wednesday, we are releasing new episodes, so make sure you're subscribed on iTunes or wherever else you like to listen so you don't miss out on our weekly masterclasses. Now today, we're talking about one of my most favorite things, and it's going to sound a little bit crazy, the number one reason why your life sucks right now and what you can do about it. Let's get started.
The Funded Today podcast is brought to you by FundedToday.com. Funded Today is a premier marketing and video agency. From startups to crowdfunding to Amazon and beyond, Funded Today has helped their clients generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. If you'd like help launching or growing your business, visit www.fundedtoday.com to speak with one of their experts.
Welcome back to the show. I am Zach Smith.
And I'm Thomas Alvord.
And in our last episode, we talked about Indiegogo In Demand and your life after crowdfunding. If you're looking for the best way to continue to raise money for your new business or idea, look no further than that episode. Lucky episode number 20. Man, 20 episodes already. We are cruising. And remember, please rate us, leave us a comment or two on our website, and tell us what you'd like to hear more or less of, and what you think about Get Funded Today, the Funded Today podcast. Every five-star review helps us spread the tips, tactics, and techniques we've personally used to make a lot of money and create great lives for ourselves with you and many others. And we really do love hearing from you. If you listen to the last episode, you'll recall this story. But it's so good, I wanted to start out today's episode with it once more. Here it goes. In the early 1900s, Thomas Edison's factory burned down. This is a true story, by the way. He sees his life's work going up in flames. Without hesitation or any panic, he calmly turns to his young son and says, "Go get your mother and all her friends. They'll never see a fire like this again." There's a whole philosophy and a way of living that encapsulates Thomas Edison's story. And today, we want to tell you about it. So Thomas, get us started.
Very, very interesting story. So how could Thomas Edison be so excited about his whole factory burning down? I want to ask a question to you, Zach, to all of the listeners, a rhetorical question, which is, how fast are you moving right now? You, Zach, how fast are you moving right now?
Well, I'm spinning around a little bit in my chair. Does that count?
Sure. We'll call that like a 1/5 mile per hour, maybe. Okay. Now, somebody on a train or bus, you know, maybe 50 miles an hour. What's the fastest you've ever traveled, Zach?
Probably a jet plane. What do those go? 500-600 miles an hour, maybe more.
And that's the interesting thing. Have you ever gone faster than that?
I don't think so.
And I would posit that you're absolutely wrong, Zach. Because right now,
hear about it.
Right now, you are moving 1,000 miles an hour. Because of the spin of the Earth. The Earth spins at about 1,000 miles per hour. So technically speaking, you are moving much, much faster.
Ah.
But if we stop there, I would still be lying, or not lying, but mistaken, depending on your perspective. Because the Earth actually orbits the Sun at about 67,000 miles per hour. So you're actually going much faster than the little spins in your chair or the spin of the Earth. But if we stop there, we're actually still completely mistaken. If you look at our solar system, which orbits the center of the galaxy, this is fascinating. We're actually moving at about 828,000 miles per hour. You actually are cruising at a super fast pace, almost 1,000,000 miles an hour. But if you stop there, you're still mistaken, because if you look at our galaxy and how fast it's moving, it's actually about 1.3 million miles per hour. And again, if we stop there, we're still missing it, because if you look at the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy that we're a part of, right, and you have the cluster of galaxies, we're part of the Virgo supercluster. It's actually moving at 2.2 billion with a B miles per hour.
Wow.
So if I ask you how fast you're moving, it's actually substantially, substantially faster. But why is it that we don't tell ourselves this is how fast we're moving? It's the vantage point that we're looking at something. And it's everything is relative. It all depends on how we're looking at it. So, Zach, you were mistaken. You're actually moving dang fast right now. Me too.
I love that. Einstein's theory of relativity on our podcast today.
Just a little bit. But to bring it more into focus, if I were to ask you, Zach, let's say this year you make $250,000 in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
How would that make you feel?
Well, it's a great question. I've thought about it quite a bit, right? $250,000, I think for most people would do the trick. It would probably be more than enough, maybe double, triple enough, maybe even more than that. But again, since I kind of understand the premise now, everything is relative. If I were to make $250,000 this year or next year, I'd probably feel terribly disappointed.
Why?
I think it's because of what I've experienced in the past and what I've, the expectations I have for the future. And just in the sense I've gotten used to making a lot more than that as well.
And it's interesting because somebody who's, say, graduates college and go gets a job and maybe they're making $50,000 a year, $250,000 would be insane. It'd be incredible.
And Thomas, to speak to that, when I was going to school, I got my degree in accounting. And I remember I was going to go on to law school. And I think I thought, well, maybe if I get my first job, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, maybe as an attorney, $75,000, $80,000, $90,000 or something. And I thought, maybe I'll eventually make it up. And in a year or so, a couple of years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, maybe I'll be making $120,000, $150,000 a year. And I'm good. I'm set for the rest of my life. So I absolutely do remember those days.
But now what?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's been an interesting ride. I had this chat with my private banker. And that alone is funny. A private banker, right? And he's like, Zach, if you made $75,000 this month, that is more than the average median income of a family with a couple people working in it. And that would be disappointing for you. And that's just ridiculous, you know? And he's like, and I understand that it happens to all of the clients who have obtained significant amount of wealth or have experienced other sorts of things like this in their life. But he's like, it's wrong. And you have to continually remain grounded. You have to remember where you came from. And you have to remember those same feelings you had when you were going to graduate school or when you were even younger, or when you wished and hoped for things you thought you could never achieve that are now as easy as writing a check to somebody.
Yeah, it's so interesting, right?
It
because
is.
The it's reality is you're neither rich nor poor, and you are both rich and poor. It sounds just philosophical, but it's true, right? Our perspective and how we view something is going to change how we feel. This wasn't anything we talked about in these notes, but I in the past I've thought about this. What if somebody came to your door, knocked on your door, and there's a police officer and says, "Hey, your spouse was in a car accident and your spouse and kids died," right? How would you feel? It doesn't even matter if the police officer is somebody who is actually just dressed up and is telling you a lie. If you actually believe that and thought that was the case, you would be really sad and distraught and probably would be beside yourself. But it's simply because not of anything that's true, but just because of what we perceive and what we think. And so anyone who's listening to this podcast literally is rich. If you go compare them to somebody who might be in, say, Africa or India or somewhere where they have absolute abject poverty, it's like, no, you're utterly wealthy. I don't care if you have even no pairs of shoes. If you just have a shirt on your back, it's like, dude, you're wealthy. But for other people, it might be like, it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, you're so poor compared to Jeff Bezos, right? Like your income for your whole life might not even be enough for what he does in 6 months. Who knows, yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
And so the point is, it's all relative. What if you're financially wealthy, but you have a horrible marriage or a horrible relationship with your partner? What does the wealth even matter, even if you are wealthy? Or what if you have a great, great marriage or a great relationship with your partner, but you have horrible health? Does it even matter, right? Or what if you have great health, but you're financially poor? And so again, what are we focusing on? What are we looking at? And what's the perspective? Because your life sucks, Zach, and your life is actually amazing. It just depends from what vantage point you're looking at it and how you want to look at it and what you decide to look at it. And the difficulty is we become accustomed, I think, to whatever we obtain. It is flashy, it's exciting, but then after a while, it actually just becomes common. I think I shared this with you before, why my wife and I, instead of trying to buy things, we try to actually buy experiences, vacations, go travel.
I'm the same way for sure.
Because, and I forget who did the research, but they found that people who consume and purchase items, for the first little bit, they like it. It brings them increased happiness or joy or whatever. But then after a while, it becomes common. So there's not even any joy that comes from it, right? It's like, it just is. Whereas people who take trips or vacations, it's not something tangible. You only retain it in the memory. Over time, as you look back and you remember those memories, they actually become more fond and you remember them better.
I can speak to this personally. I climbed to Kalapatar in Mount Everest, which is extremely difficult. It took took more than a month of our time away to go and hike Mount Everest. And quite frankly, I'd say 90% of the time I did that, I remember distinctly telling my wife, Courtney, we need to go back. We should not be doing this. This is dangerous. And other times, this is terrible. Let's never, ever do this again, no matter what anybody ever says. And literally, I don't even think it's been a year. We're already talking about how amazing it was, looking back at the pictures and wondering, I wonder if we'd ever want to do this again. And I think that it's anecdotal for sure, but it proves the point. Enhancing our life with experiences rather than things is absolutely one way to improve that relativity in terms of feeling like your life is better, happier, more successful, whatever, as compared to anything else that you want to compare it to.
Everything is relative. It's so true. I even look back 5-6 years ago, we were renting an apartment somewhere. And we had two cars. There was only, what would you call, like, where the, it's not a garage, but there's just an overhang, right? And I remember thinking, man, it'll be so nice once I have a garage to put both cars in. And now I have a garage with two cars. And what the heck do I think now? Man, it will be so nice if I build a house or we get another house in the future that has a three-car garage. Right? It's all relative. Whereas before, when I was in college, it's like, dude, it would be so nice if I had a car. You know, again, it's all relative.
And I think that's a perfect transition into kind of where I want to move next, Thomas. The grass is not green where you stand. Where you stand, the grass is not greener. And yet, paradoxically, it's also greener where you stand than where it is elsewhere. It literally is both. It depends on your perspective.
Here's an example I had heard somebody share before, which I thought was really insightful. They said, look, you're not fair to yourself. And I'm just going to use you as an example, sure. Zach. Pretend I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Zach, you're not fair to yourself. Because when you look at yourself, you compare yourself to the best person you know in each category in which you could compare yourselves. So you might compare yourself to one of your college colleagues or high school colleagues and think, man, look how successful they are. And I've only obtained X. And then you might look at a neighbor or somebody else from high school, who knows, right? And think, man, lucky dog, that guy's got so much hair. He has, you know, he's so good looking. He's so fit. I wish I was more attractive like that. And then you think, man, I wish I had a family like this family. They seem to get along so well. Their kids are well behaved. Man, I wish I had a family like that. And then you think, you know what? I wish I had a house like this neighbor. You compare yourself to the very best of each individual. But that's not really fair, right? Because if you wanted to compare yourself, which isn't a good thing, compare yourself to yourself, really. But if you were to compare yourself to the person who has the good looks, who's attractive, who you wish you looked better, well, how is their marriage? How is their business? How is their work? How is their health, right? And we never do that. We always compare ourselves to the best people. So we cherry pick, which is absolutely not fair.
That's powerful. It makes me think, again, I mean, since this podcast is live and we're talking about current events, I think of Jeff Bezos, right? It's easy for me as an entrepreneur of a successful company and maybe yourself to say, well, Jeff Bezos, he's the standard. Amazon. But look at all the craziness he's dealing with now, largely because of his own choices and his own actions. He's likely getting divorced. He's dealing with even worse than divorce because of some scandals and some cheating and some affairs, it sounds like. And he's had people try to blackmail him with sexually explicit pictures. And you ask yourself, yes, he's probably one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time. And Amazon is, if not the most successful company ever, it's at least up there. And so as an entrepreneur, I say, well, I want to be Jeff Bezos. But then I think, well, do I want a marriage like that? Do I want the publicity like that? Do I want the pressure like that? Do I want whatever's going on is in his mind to have it all and yet lose everything that I feel like is important? And it's easy to do that. And that's why I grabbed the example of Jeff Bezos, because like you said, Thomas, we are unfair to ourselves. I want to be Jeff Bezos as an entrepreneur, but I want to be the Dalai Lama as it relates to loving other people. And I want to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So under this analysis that we do, literally our grass is not as green as anywhere else. Our grass is yellow, it's brown, it's dying. It just sucks.
Everywhere.
But here's another thing. I think for most people, if you compared yourself to just somebody randomly, you'd be like, oh, dude, my job's better. I'm in better health. I have better looks. Whatever you might compare mm-hmm. yourself to, right? And again, really, we shouldn't even be comparing ourselves, but we naturally do that. And we don't even realize what we're doing. And I think to myself, how do I do this? How do I step back and remember the comparison, right? I remember mm-hmm. when I moved to where I live now, I always wanted a pond in my backyard. And I happen to live on a golf course and there's a pond literally like right in my backyard. So mm-hmm. I got exactly what I wanted, right? And the mountains, there's no really houses from my backyard. And I remember being so grateful and even praying, and I would call it my mountain resort. But then after a month or two, it just became common. I wasn't comparing it to what I had before. And now I think, oh man, it would be so nice to have this and have this. And at the end of the day, and this will be in our next podcast, some of these other items, but really right now we're kind of talking about relativity. From what perspective are we looking at things? We got to remember that everything's relative. Otherwise, we're always going to think our life sucks, because in reality, it does suck. And in reality, it's amazing. It depends on your perspective.
And again, this is not theory. You're listening to two very successful entrepreneurs who've had pretty much everything they ever wanted and more. We're telling you this so that if you are in a position that we're in, great, learn. Maybe you're going through some of the same things. And if you're not, start thinking about these things now so that one day when you get there, and you will get there, wherever there is, wherever you dream, it happens quicker than you'd imagine. I swear things happen even faster now than they ever have in the history of mankind. Get these things right in your mind now, though, so that when you do get there, it all makes sense. Now, Thomas, you have a way of kind of centering yourself around relativity. And I was told you might sing for us. You might give us a line or two. Are you going to tell me about this count your blessings thing?
As we were discussing and thinking about some of the things we might share, I remembered the hymn, Count Your Many Blessings. One of the pieces in the hymn says, when you look at others with their lands and gold, think that Christ has promised you his wealth untold. Count your many blessings money cannot buy, your reward in heaven nor your home on high. And in relation to this conversation, I would even add, when you look at others with their lands and gold, you might also think and remember all the hidden things that you don't see that actually kind of suck in their life. So don't think they have the most amazing life.
Remember all the things in their life you cannot behold. There's some rhyming.
There you go. See, you're the poet. Zach the poet. Thank you, Zach. So that really is what we got to remember. Our lives are amazing. I mean, the fact that we're even alive, that there's this life in existence is absolutely amazing. So that alone, we should be grateful for. Now, going back to what you had said, yeah, you obtain more and then what, right? You always want more. You shared with me in the Fables of Fortune book that you recently had read, right?
Yeah, I love this book, by the way. It's Fables of Fortune, What Rich People Have That You Don't Want. It's basically this guy, his name is Richard Watts. He wrote a book after having been an attorney for some of the richest, most powerful people in the world about their lives and why, although everybody is aspiring to have that life, to have that private jet, to have the yacht, to have the money, or maybe just be a millionaire, whatever it is, why you might not actually want it. I love the phrase that he gave in the book, and we'll probably share quite a bit in this episode on this, but he says a lot of what we think we need, we don't. The richest person is not who has the most, but the one who needs the least.
That is so powerful. I shared this with you the other day, and I love this idea of empowering myself, right? And that's why I take freezing cold showers now. I do other things because I want to see how much can I push myself? What am I capable of achieving? And it was, in a way, almost this breakthrough idea to know, wow, instead of trying to obtain more money, more wealth to buy a beach house or whatever it might be, what if my focus was to actually obtain a place where I don't have desires for more? Or maybe I have them, but it's not at the forefront. It doesn't even matter at all. And you literally become free then. It's empowering.
That's interesting. And you're someone who basically has it all. So it's interesting to hear you say that.
It's interesting, right? Because I used to think, okay, yeah, if I had this much to live off, things would be great. And then once you get there, it's like, oh, well, there's this and that. That would be nice. And I used to think, okay, the more you make, your desire for consumption will change, but the ticket items become bigger. And I've learned, oh, the people who are really wealthy, well, they're looking at buying a yacht or a jet, and that might be $30, $40, $50 million. And then I realized, wow, look at the wealthiest people. And this is a generalization, right? But some of the more common ones. The more wealthy you become, you actually have different expenditures. They're actually just different. Mm-hmm. Look at Jeff Bezos. If I'm not mistaken, with his space program, I believe he's putting $1 billion a year into it. Mm-hmm. And I realized, looking at him and others, as well as myself, it's like, oh man, my business expenditure, my biggest expenditures are actually new business ventures because they're exciting for me and exhilarating. And so you're always going to have more you're going to want to spend money on. And so you really got to learn, how do you just curb those desires?
And mark my word, this is true for everybody. I absolutely remember saying, in fact, I wrote it down. It was an Instagram post or a Facebook post I made of all my goals. And I did this when I was fairly young, maybe 15, 16. I was kind of maybe weird. Go back and listen to the episode on goal set if you want to see how Thomas and I set goals. And anyway, I wrote down all these goals and then I achieved those goals. And literally this last year, I think every single thing I ever wrote down from when I was young and what I wanted to achieve now has a green check mark by it. It's 100% achieved. There's nothing I ever wrote down that I wanted that I don't have now. And the crazy thing is, just like Thomas said, when you say, I want to be a cash millionaire by the time I'm 30, and then it happens, well, suddenly you want to be worth 10 million. And then 10 million becomes 100 million, and 100 million becomes 500 million, and 500 million becomes a billionaire. And it's this constant search for more and more wealth, simply for the sake of having more wealth and really nothing else, aside from the fact, like Thomas mentions, the more money you have, the more things tend to control you. And so you need more money to support a lifestyle you never even knew you wanted. And so determine your lifestyle now and then be happy once you get there and don't change. And that's one of the happiest things you can possibly do. I love this, again, from the book, Fables of Fortune. And we'll link to this in the show notes because I think everybody should read it, even if you're not there yet, just because it will help you get the mindset right. So when you get there, you'll be more prepared than we were. Every time we exercise our right to acquire something else we want, but don't necessarily need, we increase the financial requirements for maintaining that lifestyle. Wants become needs. Crazy, right?
It's absolutely true.
So true. One bit of advice that I'd probably give on this, if you can buy everything, or if you can buy most of what you want, just wait. This was really hard for my wife to understand, but now she loves it. If anything costs more than $500 for us, we do not buy it. Even if we really, really want it, we give ourselves a 48-hour rule. We go home, we sleep about it, we think about it, we wonder if we really need it, we research, we see if it is exactly what we want, and then we determine if we want to buy it or not. If you're really wealthy, do the same thing for cars, but maybe give yourself a month or two in between. If it's houses and you are buying cabins and villages, whatever else it may be, second homes, vacation rentals, whatever, give yourself a year. Really, what is that in the grand scheme of things? It's not very much, but it's a powerful thing so that your wants and needs don't become confused and enmeshed together into something that is terrible. Don't let your wealth control you and don't let your poverty control you. And I think if you can apply that principle now, or if you're where we're at, or even further along on that wealth spectrum than we are, if you can go back and fix some of these things before it becomes too late, I think you're going to have much more happiness than by kind of figuring it out the hard way down the road.
Well, and it's all about, as we're talking about, our perspective, the relativity. Where are we looking at it from? If we don't have something yet, yeah, it might look like it might make us happier. It might make the grass greener, and it may, but then our perspective changes and then it's not so green. And here's actually a fun fact. I don't know if you know this, Zach. The grass is greener on the other side, that phrase, mm-hmm. actually came from an American song written in 1924 called "The Grass is Always Greener in the Other Fellow's Yard." We don't really use that phrase anymore. I pulled the chorus up here. It says, "The grass is always greener."
Wait a sec. Are you going to bypass singing on us one more time today, Thomas?
You really want me to sing?
I don't know. I've heard you got a nice voice, but
I'll forego this time. Maybe All we right. can sing a duet sometime.
Okay.
"So the grass is always greener in the other fellow's yard. The little row we have to hoe, oh boy, that's hard. But if we could all wear green glasses now, it wouldn't be so hard to see how green the grass is in our own backyard."
Man, I love that.
That's exactly what we're trying to say, right? A couple years ago, I was thinking about this and I was thinking, man, I would love to create a picture where it's like somebody who's looking over at his neighbor, right? Kind of like farmland or something. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of looking over at his neighbor and he's seeing his fields that are all green. But from his vantage point, he can't see that behind his barn, his fields are all torn up or maybe dead or, you know, some pest had come and destroyed it. And yet that person who's looking across over at his neighbor's yard and just seeing all of his green grass, if he but turned around or looked to the side, he would actually see he has green grass too. But he's just not looking at it. He's just seeing the yellow grass of his front yard and the green grass of his neighbor's front yard. But if he looked in the backyard, he'd realize, oh, my backyard's actually green and my neighbor's backyard's actually yellow. And you realize, oh, we're actually not that much different. It all kind of evens itself out.
I love that chorus because if we look at life with a different perspective, with those green glasses, as Raymond Egan and Richard Whiting say, they're the ones who wrote that song, we'll recognize we actually have our lives pretty good ourselves already. I kind of think of perspective too, Thomas, and maybe this isn't exactly in line with what we're talking about, but you shared this with me maybe a year or so ago, and it's the painter who's looking at the egg, but then painting something great.
Yeah, so I had seen this picture probably 15 years ago, and it's basically a painter. If you Google like painter painting egg picture, there's an egg, and a painter's looking at the egg, but then he has his brush or pencil, I forget what, on the canvas or the paper, and he's drawing, I forget if it was a chicken or what it was, right? But he basically was seeing the potential of that egg. So he wasn't drawing, hey, here's the egg. He was drawing what was in the egg, what that egg could become.
We'll get this for you in the show notes too, so you can look at it, but it's pretty beautiful. And it just shows that really with perspective, you can achieve anything you want to achieve. And I know that's kind of like foo-foo-y and crazy out there, but quite frankly, the longer I live, the more I believe our minds control everything. I have a maxim that I live by. It's James Allen in his famous work, As a Man Thinketh. And he says, whatever your present environment is, you will fall, remain, or rise with your thoughts, your vision, your ideal. You will become as small as your controlling desire, as great as your dominant aspiration. And the longer I live, like I said, the more I find that to be true. And I think that's why maxims stand the test of time. It's not just because they're trite phrases that everybody says. It's because everybody does say them and they have lasted through the test of time. Why? Because they work. And because they work is why they last. And that's why it's so important to listen to people who have come before and to learn from history, not just so that we don't repeat it, but so that we can have an entirely different history that we have a lot of control over, which I think is very, very powerful. And again, I want to kind of switch topics for the last section that we want to talk about today. And this one's going to kind of throw everything into a shift, Thomas. The grass is likely not even greener where you think it is greener.
Just a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago, I was meeting with somebody, a friend of mine here in the neighborhood, and I had met at his office. And they're a company that sells phone cases, and they do about $50 million in revenue a year, which I thought, man, that's pretty good, right? That's nice. And yet here he was saying, we're wanting to launch a crowdfunding campaign and get into the bag industry, like shoulder bags and backpacks and stuff. Because for him, he was saying, yeah, we need to pivot because our margins are becoming less and less. Retail at Verizon and these other phone companies where we do the majority of our sales, they'll take 70 points. So if the product sells for $10, they're taking 70% of that. He was just saying how they wanted to pivot and go to something else. So even though you have this company that's making $50 million in revenue plus in a year, it wasn't actually that amazing because their margins weren't that good. And so it's interesting because it actually looked green, but it wasn't that green. I think we may have shared this already, Zach, but there are campaigns on Kickstarter that have raised $1 million and they literally have spent $500,000, $800,000, or even $1 million to raise that. And literally their profit is negative. So you might think, man, lucky dog, look at him. He launched that campaign. He must be rolling on the dough. He must be so happy. But you don't realize actually what is going on behind the scenes. And that is really what matters because that's really telling you what's happening. So you can't look at something and think, man, they make a lot of money. Or one other example, I was just chatting with somebody and we were talking about one of their friends and they're like, yeah, they're pretty well to do. They got a really big house, like a 10,000 square foot house. He has like 5 cars. He has a Porsche and I forget what other cars. And it's like, yeah, maybe the guy's well to do or he may be in a ton of debt. I don't know which it is. And it doesn't matter, right? It's not for me to judge, but it's not for me to feel bad that I don't have that, if I don't have that, because you have no clue what's behind it.
And if you do want to compare, and if you do want to judge, your story's pretty timely, Thomas, because again, I had a meeting with my private banking team a couple of days ago, and he said, you would be surprised. He's like, I can't say names or anything, but I can give percentages. He's like, 85% of these people who have good businesses and they're making money have a $1.5 million house with a $2 million mortgage and a couple $100,000 cars that they owe $90,000 on. And all of this wealth and all of this luxury and all of this stuff is actually a facade. He kind of said the same thing, the whole perspective thing.
My banker I was chatting with a while back, and Zach and I don't live in the same city. We're about an hour apart, so we don't have the same banker. But he was sharing, and this was actually not my private banker, but the teller. And we were just chit-chatting and talking. I forget what I asked him, but he shared a story. He's like, you know what? It's so interesting. He's like, one day I had this guy come in. He was younger. He had a super nice car, super nice clothes. So rude, super rude. The guy was ticked off because his check had bounced, right? The guy had not a penny to his name, but he looked like he had it all.
Yeah.
And then he said later in the day, this guy comes who had like a paint truck, I think it was, or some work truck that was totally beat, paint chip coming off, everything. And the guy, right, didn't have a presence about him that made you think he was super wealthy or anything, right? Just super simple. And he's like, dude, I obviously can't tell you his balance or who he was, but he had a ton of money in his account. Like, you would have never guessed this guy had that much money. So it just goes to show, whatever you perceive, don't think that's the case. And if anything, whatever you perceive could very well be just the opposite.
Richard Watts says it this way: living below the world's radar allows you freedom to explore, to make mistakes unnoticed, to take yourself less seriously, and to create your own life story without uninvited social editors. I think that illustrates a good point. The painter and the beat up paint truck and everything. And he was kind of free to go about and live his life. And the other guy wanted everybody to see it and know it. And he drew attention to him. But by doing so, his life was limited. Sometimes Thomas and I joke that we kind of have the best of both worlds because we're only really celebrities in the crowdfunding space in terms of worldwide fame and recognition. And yet we have a lot of the advantages and luxuries of Hollywood celebrities. But the difference is the uninvited social editors that we are very grateful we don't have in our own life. And I think we both count our blessings on that, to paraphrase that song from earlier.
And some people might think it's ironic, but sometimes when people tell me, yeah, I want to start my business or I really need to get going, sometimes I ask, why? Why do you want to start a business? On the one hand, it is a truism that the easiest way to make money, if you want to be wealthy, is to own your own business.
The easiest way to get wealthy, not to make money, but to get wealthy. Yeah,
Thank you. And if you look at the top sports players, if you look at the top actors, if you look at the top anybody and how much money they make, it always pales in comparison to how much the top business people.
Even the Hollywood celebrities that get all the fame, the producers are the ones who are making all the money on those movies when they succeed. Even though you might see Leonardo DiCaprio made $5 million on this movie. Well, the producer made $100 million, you know?
I ask, why do you want to start your own business? Because again, yes, you can make the most wealth, but at the same time, there's a lot of drawbacks. When you pick up a stick, you got to pick up both ends. You got to pick up the pros and the cons. Yeah, you get to choose your own hours. It's called 24/7, right?
What do people say about entrepreneurship, Thomas? What's the joke? An entrepreneur is the only type of person who will quit his 9-to-5 40 hours a week so he can work 120 hours for himself or 80 hours for himself or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
There's truth to that.
I've seen so many business owners, oh, I want to get into that market. I want to get into that market. And it's like, why? Is it really going to be that much better?
It's compression, Thomas. Again, Richard Watts talks about this in his book, but and it starts with your question. Well, would you be happy if you made 250 grand this year? I'd be happy, I guess, but it's the fear mindset. These business owners are just like everybody else. If they have a year that's not as good as their best year, well, they're comparing it to their best year. And then they're like, well, the market's dying. Well, this is bad. And we've talked about markets before. We've talked about 80-20. We've talked about all these other things in other episodes, and you should listen to those. But in reality, anytime you feel compression, Richard Watts gives a story of this guy who's worth $100 million. He lives in Florida, and he suddenly notices a little bit of a downturn in the market. Doesn't hurt him that much. I mean, maybe he's making a couple less million a year or something, but he's worth $100 million, like cash $100 million. He starts taking the back roads so he doesn't have to pay for all the Florida tolls for $1 or $2 or $3 a pop. And this is a guy worth $100 million. People, again, when they feel compression, instead of expansion, even the richest people in the world will tighten things up. Sometimes they'll tighten things up more than people who are not wealthy or people who are poor just because of that fear. And again, why do you want to be an entrepreneur when that fear is going to be with you? If you can work for somebody else and you can go home at 5 or 6 or whatever it is and be done and call it quits, there's a lot of joy to that. There's a lot of joy to being able to not be on call 24/7, to be able to let go. And to wake up the next day with what you need to do, and here's all I need to do, and then I can clock in and clock out, and I can be done. And there's something to be said for that that we don't really talk about a lot as entrepreneurs. We always glorify the entrepreneurial lifestyle, but I don't think anybody talks about the two ends of the stick, as you call it, Thomas. Last thing we want to hit on, I recently watched an ESPN 30 for 30 documentary on Ric Flair. Again, I don't really like WWE, WWF, all that stuff. It's basically the fake wrestling. They don't really hurt each other, but it's more dancing and ballet. But it was interesting, and Ric Flair was a personality and a celebrity. Still is, 70 years old now. The quote goes like this from Richard Watts: "Your legacy will be shaped by what you actually do rather than what you have. With no kingdom to run, you will have more time. With no business to run, you have more time. With no whatever to run, you'll have more time, which is the real treasure in this life. Your descendants will remember you as father or mother rather than king or founder." I really like that. I had read this book, and then I had watched this documentary. And Ric Flair, by many accounts, was the greatest entertainer of all time for wrestling. Millions of people loved him. He had 21 titles and all this different stuff. And he could sell out any stadium he was ever in because he was such a good personality. And he was always in extreme shape. But he lived a very crazy life. He had been with 10,000 women by some accounts and by his own. He had a couple divorces. Lots of bad things happened. He drank like every single day and somehow still has a liver. And we're talking like 10 beers a day and 5 to 6 mixed drinks. And again, he's admitting these things and telling him, and he did this over a period of 27 years or something. At the end of the documentary, all of this to say, they say, "Rick, what do you want to be remembered as?" And he kind of is crying at this point because he's had a good life, but it's a pretty messed up life about the things that matter. And he says, "Well, I would have loved to say I was a good father, good family man, good husband." He's like, "But quite frankly, I have self-awareness. I can't possibly say that." And he said, "So I guess I'll just go down as being one of the greatest wrestlers and entertainers, performers, whoever lived." And you could tell he had sadness in his heart when he said that. And this is a guy who's made millions of dollars. One time he brought his family over to his house and he paid a couple million dollars for it. And his mom and dad were like, his dad specifically was like, "What are you doing, Rick?" And he's like, I was hoping he'd be all happy and impressed that here I am, this guy, Ric Flair, who's done all this, and I've paid cash for this house and I've done all this stuff. And the dad kind of knew. And now Rick knows that really what matters in life is generally not what you think matters at the time. You need to be grateful for what you have. You need to count your blessings. And as soon as you stop being grateful for those things and wanting more and ever going after the pursuit of more, simply for the sake of wanting more, I think that's where you run into a lot of trouble. And in the case of Ric Flair, it can really spiral out of control.
And if you look at all of this, and my dad actually was the one who I first remember hearing this from and learning this, he said, look, service is the remedy to all of this. It helps us see that our lives are actually good, because you see other people's problems and difficulties and trials, and you realize, man, however bad I have it, it's not as bad as this person. And so in a way, a remedy is to serve other people, whether it's your neighbor, your family members, your friends.
And again, that's not just some kind of maxim or anything. Actually go out and do it and you'll find it works. Your life really doesn't suck. It's bad because you perceive that it's bad. Depending on how you look at things, your perspective changes. What's your Henry Ford quote that you always like to say, Thomas?
Whether you think you can or you can't, you're probably right. And you could probably say kind of a corollary to that, whether you think your life sucks or doesn't suck, you're probably right. If you think it sucks,
that's great.
You're right. If you think it doesn't suck, you're right.
And again, our satisfaction is ephemeral. It's fleeting. A lot of times, I found this to probably be the hardest struggle ever, full transparency. Richard says it this way. Again, we've quoted this book quite a bit in this episode. He said, as long as we have opportunity, we have hope. And when we have hope, we become motivated to achieve our goals through hard work and persistence. Satisfaction and contentment are ideas to be chased. The very act of reaching our goals can cause the beginning of personal stagnation. And like I said, I've achieved every goal I ever set out to achieve when I set my goals when I was younger. And now the personal stagnation starts to set in and I have to ask myself, well, what do I want now? What do I want for my life? Where else can I go? Because you need something to look for. You need to have hope. You need to create an opportunity for yourself, because when those go away, your motivation goes away. And when your motivation goes away, personal stagnation sets in. And when personal stagnation sets in, that's where you get into the really scary stuff, depression, suicide, you know, the terrible things of life. And you can't let that stuff happen. I think to close this episode, the most beautiful illustration we can possibly do is Michelangelo. One time Michelangelo gets asked how he had envisioned his masterpiece, David, within this giant hunk of marble that they had for him. And he responded like this: David was inside the rock all along. My only job was to remove the unnecessary rock from around him so he could escape.
It's really interesting. In a way, we could look at all of our own lives individually, and your life and everyone listening, your life is actually beautiful and wonderful and great. It's sitting there as a masterpiece, but in a way, it's kind of like enclosed and hidden from view. Because certain perspectives that we have, they don't allow us to see how amazing our life is. And we got to chisel away our stubborn perspective and we can see the glory and the wonder that we are.
And that is our show today. The Funded Today Products of the Week. Kind of excited about these. Mine is a particularly special one. It's one of those things that, for me, I would personally be very interested in. Because my wife is a movie buff like no other. I mean, she knows the names and the actors and actresses and directors and credits, and she's seen like every movie ever made to, like, it's no joke. If you ever want to get into talking about movies, you need to meet my wife, Courtney. Anyway, the product that I have selected is Red Text. And they are launching in early March, I believe March 11th. And Red Text works like this. You're in a movie theater. You've hired a babysitter. You're at a public event, everybody says, silence your cell phones. Problem is, your kid has a problem. Problem is, you get an urgent call from somebody about a business deal that needs to happen right then. Happens to me a lot. May happen to you. Well, you can't check your phone because you're going to anger all the people in the theater. Bright lights, all this other stuff, right? Or you missed that business meeting and you might have missed a huge opportunity for something in your life. That's a problem. RedText solves this. RedText is an app you can download onto your phone that makes it so that all of your phone becomes red with a black background. And by doing this, it doesn't shoot up any light. No one's even going to know you're on your phone. And you can handle all those important text messages, or you can exit the theater or get on a call or pay attention to things without having to turn your phone off completely or to silence things or to, you know, do the unthinkable and offend people in the movie theater and have issues with bright lights or interrupting the movie for everybody else or, you know, at a public event or listening to a speaker or at church or wherever. RedText is the perfect app to still have access to the important notifications you need so that you know your kids are safe, so that you know you're not missing out on any business opportunities or anything like that, while being courteous and polite to everybody around you. Check it out. RedText, launching March 11th on Kickstarter.
My product of the week is called the Only Travel System, and that's spelled O-N-L-I, Only, Only Travel System. And this is actually maybe one of the coolest backpacks I've ever seen. And it's not quite a backpack. It's actually a minimalist travel bag, a travel system. There's a middle compartment, a front compartment, and a back compartment. And the back compartment can unzip. You can use it as a backpack. And then if you want, you could use just the middle compartment as a carry-on bag that has wheels. Or you also have the front compartment that will attach, for example, on an airplane. So you have a workstation, and you can actually attach the back and the front into its own pack. So basically, it's super functional, it's minimalist, but it's almost like a Swift Army knife, but on steroids and for bags. That's the best way I could explain it. You should check it out, especially if you travel or use a bag in your day-to-day. It's the Only Travel System. Again, that's O-N-L-I, the Only Travel System.
I love it. So now the question. How much longer will you waste time comparing yourself to other people? Their lives are no greener. Your life's beautiful. Your life also isn't beautiful. Just depends on how you look at it. So look at your life from the best possible vantage point and perspective imaginable. Look at it from the perspective of the Virgo supercluster, moving at 2.2 billion miles per hour. Because whether you feel your life is beautiful or not, you're probably right. And next time, we're going to share my, Zach and Thomas's take on stoicism. We might butcher it, but it might be the greatest thing you ever hear. And if you don't know what stoicism is, you're in for a treat. Tune in next Wednesday. And remember, don't wait until tomorrow. Get funded today.
Funded Today is the worldwide leader in rewards-based crowdfunding on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Combined, they have raised over $200 million and counting for thousands of new ideas and inventions worldwide. If you've got an idea for a new product or invention, visit fundedtoday.com to speak with one of their experts.